Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Welcome back to the program, Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Thanks for listening to AFR. You can watch the show if you'd like to at our Facebook or YouTube channel. Is it a channel, Ed?
I think they call it a channel.
YouTube is a channel. YouTube is a channel. Facebook is not.
Okay. But you can check us out there at Facebook or YouTube. And type in Today's Issues. David Barton is the expert on these things. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Tim.
From Wall Builders. And Steve Jordahl is with us.
Good morning. David's found pretty much an expert on anything.
David knows a lot about...
That's because you have low standards.
Right? Yeah. So YouTube is a channel, David. You know that for a fact.
Yes, YouTube is a channel.
Okay. And we want to thank you for being with us today. You're here in Tupelo. You spoke at Hope Church yesterday in Tupelo, and then you did some video for us this morning. And We're maximizing David's
absolutely
time while he's here in town. Wall Builders. How long has Wall Builders been around now?
87 is when we got started. So what's that, 31 years?
What were you doing before that?
School teacher. I was a high school principal, taught math and science, and coached basketball.
Did you ever go home? Coach basketball, principal, and what?
Was taught math and science.
Unbelievable. You left, and how did that happen?
It was interesting because my math and science background is just a very providential thing point to Proverbs 16:3 that when you commit your ways to the Lord, He'll establish your thoughts. We were invited to go to a convention in Washington, D.C. to meet our congressman. I'm from a small country town. One thing I never want to meet is my congressman. I don't want anything to do with politics. I don't want anything to do with law.
This is what you're thinking of.
That's exactly it. The growing up, the four things I absolutely disliked were history, law, government, and politics. Those four things.
Good grief.
So I stayed as far away from this as I could.
The Holy Spirit can change a life.
Oh, yeah,
right there.
That's right. I stayed as far away as I could, and we ended up getting invited to a conference in D.C., and I prayed about it so I could say, no, I'm not going. And then after praying about it, felt like the Lord said, you need to go. You need to go meet with the congressman. I don't want to meet the congressman. I don't even like congressmen. And so as we were getting ready for that, there was a thought that for the next 6 weeks, I could never get off my mind. I woke up with it in the morning, went to bed at night, and I was just harassed by it. And there were two things. Find out what happened to SAT, Scholastic Aptitude Test scores since World War II, and find out when prayer was taken out of schools. And on the second one, that's easy. We never had prayer in schools. I went through school, didn't have prayer, so there never was prayer in schools. The first one, SAT scores, I thought, why do I care about World War II? I know what it is now. I've got the kids. We do the testing every year. And to get it off my mind, I went and checked, and SAT scores go back to 1926. And in 1963, the SAT scores broke violently straight down for 17 straight years. Mm. Never been more than 2 years in a row in any direction. And they got to 63, and it looked like they fell off a cliff. And then I went and found, the year we took school prayer out was 62-63. I'm going, oh, my gosh. As a statistical guy, that's a pretty significant correlation. We tell God, take a hike out of education, and then for 17 straight years, scores plummet. And so when I got to D.C., I showed that to a congressman. He looked at that and said, I've never seen anything like this. And he said, somebody ought to research this. And it's kind of like the Lord said, do it. So we went back and took 47 categories of statistical information from cabinet-level departments. They all broke in 1962-63, every one of them.
And so let me just stop you just for just a second. You were the first one to do that?
Yeah.
I remember when I came, to Tupelo, and it was in 87 to work with a church here. I remember in 87, 88, 89, somewhere in there, seeing that.
That's it.
I remember the pastor there, it was a good friend of mine, Cecil Pumphrey, he's now gone to be with the Lord. He says, what do you think about it? Because I liked history and political science. And I said, I've never seen anything like that. That was yours?
That's it.
Wow.
Was that the To Pray or Not to Pray book?
America to Pray or Not to Pray. That was it. And those charts caught on, and in that particular year, there was a presidential election going on between Bush 41 and Dukakis, and one of the big campaign issues was getting prayer back in schools. And so national media said, oh, look at these charts. This would be great to talk about. And so I ended up doing, in the last 52 days of the campaign, 72 meetings, and that just kind of launched it. And then people started wanting more. But the way I got into history was real different because I still didn't like history, stayed away from it. And as I was saying, you know, if there's correlations, there might be other correlations. Why don't I read Supreme Court cases, see what values they take out, see if there's other impacts statistically measurable. And as I was doing that, it's kind of like the Lord just dropped in my heart one day and said, you know, the courts keep saying they're taking prayer out of schools or Bible because the founding fathers didn't want it. If that's true, then why didn't the founding fathers take it out? Why wait 220 right. years to take out what they did? I thought, that's a great question. So I went to the law library and read original Supreme Court decisions starting in 1789. The guys on the court wrote the Constitution and find that they never took it out. They were on the other side. Unanimous Supreme Court decisions, you'll never take the Bible out of schools. And so now I'm seeing history I've never heard in my life. And that got us into looking at original history. And so that's where we got in history, law, government, and politics.
We're talking to David Barton. David's in studio with us today. We're glad to have him. And his wife Cheryl's here with us as well. David is the president and founder of Wall Builders. And David, if people want to, you guys have so many resources that folks need to take advantage of. If they want to look at books or DVDs and so forth, where can they go?
Wallbuilders.com is the easiest way to get all that. It's all online.
Wallbuilders.com, and you've got a brand new book out.
Brand new book, This Precarious Moment.
That's the name of it?
That's the name of it. It looks at six issues that are kind of touch point issues right now. We call it a precarious moment because we're, unlike we've been for the last 242 years, we are at a cliff, and we're trying to decide whether to walk off that cliff as a nation or not. So it's unlike any other moment we've had in history except perhaps 1856, when we're trying to decide whether to split the nation apart over slavery at that point in time.
And this is co-authored with Jim Garlow.
Jim Garlow, that's right.
Another friend of the ministry. Looks like a fascinating book.
Steve?
Well, I was going to start here. I've never seen in limited time that I've been watching politics professionally since the 80s. This is about the most divisive I've ever seen mm-hmm. it. How does this compare with, you just brought up the Civil War, for example.
Yeah.
How does this division that we're seeing right now between the parties, the rancor that we saw in the Kavanaugh hearings,
yeah.
how does that compare historically?
It's historically, the last time the nation was this polarized was in 1856. You had senators attacking each other on the floor of the Senate, caning each other, beating each other, sending each
physically?
Other to the hospital physically. You had physical attacks being called for by one party on the other. They were physically confronting each other. The nation was polarized, polling-wise, you know, over the issue of slavery, civil rights, and it led to violence. I mean, one side incited violence, and the other side, you know, was the recipient of it. So we're at that kind of polarization, except it's not just one issue this time. It's in a whole world view of issues. So you can, and that's why we chose six issues in this book as being really polarizing issues.
How do you think this is going to play out come November? Do you think... we had a civil war the last time this happened and literally firing. Is this something that we can resolve in an election?
Well, you had a civil war, and you need to remember that in that civil war, it was the minority that was on the war path. They were eventually defeated. They won all the early battles, but the majority of the people, the population percentage-wise, was heavily in favor of ending slavery. So it was a smaller population percentage-wise that wanted to keep it and perpetuate it. They were the aggressors. They were the ones who attacked in the Senate. They attacked in the other side. They attacked preachers and ministers. When 3,000 clergymen from New England sent a petition to Congress calling for the abolition of slavery as northern pastors, they went berserk over separation church and state, and these guys are trying to establish a theocracy and all the stuff we hear today, same kind of stuff. So what you had was, voting-wise, there was a minority that was on the loud, vocal, mean side and a majority on the other side. That's where we are today. And so what we're seeing, I think, polling-wise, what was significant to me was Kavanaugh hearings. After 1 week of Kavanaugh hearings, the nation is pretty undecided. After 2 weeks, every major poll broke 4 to 8 points in the direction of the conservative candidate, which said to me, people still, they've still got their brains, it's still working, they're still, they were watching to see if there's something we didn't know about, is there evidence that, that is going to come out, and when there wasn't, then they turned in that direction. We have seen that in the political election for the last several years, that the conservative side has been growing. When you look at self-identification of states today, there are only, out of all 50 states, if you self-identify as liberal, conservative, or moderate, there's only 3 states in the United States where liberals, self-identifying liberals, outnumber conservatives. In most states, it's 2 to 1 conservatives outnumber liberals, but you would never know that because conservatives tend to be silent. So we're a polarized nation with a bunch of loudmouths on one side and a whole lot of people who don't want to get in a fight on the other side.
What in the world happened to California, David? Because, I mean, this is a state that elected Ronald Reagan twice to be president.
Richard Nixon before that was
in the
governor,
70s
right?
and eight, in the 70s, right? And you know, now, what happened there?
California is the epitome of pietism in the church. There are enough churches in California. If I could go to California and take the Bible-believing churches, evangelical churches, I could take that state back in 2 or 3 elections. I could elect out of one denomination.
Are you blaming
out there,
the Christians?
I am. If I just took the Calvary Chapel churches out there, I could elect half the assembly members in California. You have churches of 10 to 12 to 15,000, and they have been standing on the sidelines. I will say that now Calvary Chapels are getting full on board. Jack Hibbs, Calvary Chapel, Chino
full on
Hills,
board with
others.
What?
On going after legislators. I spoke at Jack Hibbs' church not long ago, and after the service, his 10,000 members, he had them all go outside and write letters to their assemblymen. They have 5 assemblymen, and they had these silly bills going through about, you know, the gender stuff and parents and coming into the home and checking gender stuff. They had bills going through if you can't sell any book that criticizes LGBT, which would be the Bible. And so 5 assembly members in that region, he had there were 7,000 members of his church that wrote letters to their assembly guys. 3 of the assembly guys reversed their position just because of the letters they got from that one church.
I just heard a sermon from Jack Hibbs. It was Saturday. It was Jan Markell was playing it on her program. He spoke at Understanding the Times conference. That brother was on fire for people getting involved.
Let me tell you, in that church out there, they got on fire locally. They elected, there's 50,000 people in the school district there. They elected the majority of the school board out of their church. And that majority of the school board started having prayer to open their school board meetings. That is now headed to the U.S. Supreme Court. So 3 guys in that church got on that school board, and the other side is saying, you can't have prayer at school board meetings. Well, it's going to the Supreme Court this year because of that church. And so California has more megachurches than any other state out there. If those churches did what Jack Hibbs is doing right now, California would not be in the mess they're in. There are plenty of conservative Christians in California make a difference. They're just not doing it.
They just don't vote either, right?
Well, they have. I think it's starting to change. I'm seeing more good stuff come out of California churches than I've seen in my lifetime.
Wow.
So I think California is sitting on the verge of change if they will follow through. Now, again, it'll be a brutal battle. The other side's not going to want to go away. They're not going to give it up to churches. But another, you know, Rob McCoy, Calvary Chapel pastor, is now the mayor of Thousand Oaks, California, and that's a Calvary Chapel pastor. And Thousand Oaks is no small town, you know.
Right.
So we're seeing good things happen in California.
Steve hails from California.
I do. Grew up in Santa Cruz.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a wild place to be.
It is. Yeah. It is.
Santa Cruz, not the place you would want to move to right now unless you wanted to get in a fight somehow.
Although, I got to tell you, my parents are involved in a church there that really is doing some good stuff.
Yeah.
So,
well, and that's what I'm seeing all over California. They're finally getting to the point where they're waking up.
Yeah.
And if they will behave like they're awake, California can turn. And you look at the polling right now with John Cox, who's an evangelical Catholic, and he's now within the margin of error in a state that maybe a moderate Republican.
What race for what?
Governor. For governor. Okay. John Cox for governor. Is he and Gavin Newsom are now neck and neck.
In California?
In California.
Wow.
And he's an evangelical Catholic.
Ever since he was, I think he might have been a city council member in San Francisco, but became
mayor.
And he has built, you can tell, he has built his whole life on a course to the presidency, the White House. That's what he wants.
Yeah.
So for him, if he winds up losing, that would be a stunner.
And he's probably number one stockholder in Brill Cream. What do you say? Looking at him?
Well, he's got stock him or Joel Osteen, I don't know.
They both got real cream stock?
I think so. Well, most you lost half our audience.
I was going to say, there's not a millennial out there who knows what you're talking
about. Who
knows
what Brill Cream is.
Oh, they don't?
I don't think so. Is Brill Cream still around?
I don't know.
No.
That's where you used to slick your hair back.
And that's the other half that you just lost.
Well, how do you get the wet look then if you don't use Brill Cream? What do they do now?
You use product, Tim.
Yeah.
Product.
Product
what? I use pepperoni grease on my hair.
That makes sense.
Wax? You use wax?
No. Well, I mean, some may.
There is a wax that is really popular now.
Okay.
And it gives you the wet look. It gives you the shiny, glossy kind of hair, and it holds things.
Are you interested, Tim?
No. Was that going to get me fired? No. I see what you're doing there, Ed. You're sort of making fun of the fact that I don't have much hair, but you're not quite going full board with the
I declined to comment.
Yeah. The hair you have left, you could make it really shiny.
Yeah. I already got shiny on top. I got shiny taken care of. Steve?
Hey, I wanted to ask you, David, about a decision last Friday in the Alabama Supreme Court written by a justice named Tom Parker. He says that Roe v. Wade is a constitutional aberration that hinders the state's ability to protect the God-given respect and dignity of unborn human life. It was a case of a fetal homicide. Mm-hmm. This is being touted by some people that we respect as being perhaps a chink in the Roe v. Wade decision at the Supreme Court.
It is if you get original intent people on the Supreme Court. Now, if you have agenda-driven people, which is what we've had for a while, but we think with Kavanaugh there is a change here. And if you read the actual Constitution, if it's not in the Constitution, it belongs to the states under the 9th and 10th Amendment, the people in the 9th and the states in the 10th. And so since abortion is not a federal issue, you know, Justice Parker's right. This goes to the states. So this particular ruling, which we're sure will get appealed to the Supreme Court, it gives the new court an opportunity to say, you know what, we should never have done Roe v. Wade in 73. That was never in the Constitution for the feds to do. That is a state issue, which is where it has always been. We give it back to the states. Now, some states have already seen that coming, and so in Connecticut, Delaware, and elsewhere, they have put in the state constitution a right to abortion because they think that there is a coming change where that they're going to overturn Roe v. Wade at the federal courts. So we see the blue states starting to enshrine the right to abort as a constitutional right in their state constitution. But on the other hand, you have states like Oklahoma and Texas. And by the way, original Roe v. Wade came out of Texas. And so they struck down a Texas statute. Texas has never taken that statute off the books. So if Roe v. Wade is dumped, we have the original law back on our books still.
So when I look back at, for example, the Lawrence v. Texas decision that struck down every marriage or
sodomy law,
and the Obergefell decision that struck down every
marriage law,
then could a pro-life decision of the Supreme Court strike down every pro-abortion law?
No. It could. It depends on how it's phrased. There were two things. That was part of the discussion over Kavanaugh versus Barrett on Supreme Court nominees. It was believed that Barrett would be more of just get rid of all abortions, where Kavanaugh is going to be more of let's see what that law is and let's rule only on that issue. So Barrett was seen as much broader in getting all abortions gone, where Kavanaugh is probably going to look at the issue that comes before him, which constitutionally is the right thing to do. I mean, you don't want a judicial activist on the right or the left. So Barrett would have been really good. We think with Kavanaugh, we don't know yet until we see rulings, but we think it may take a couple of cases, two or three cases, to get it all done. But it also depends on how Justice Parker worded this decision, because if he worded it in a way that gives them the opportunity to rule only on what he said, that decision, then it could be done in one case. So it's always a tactical, strategic decision. But there are a lot of things moving forward right now in the lower system that are designed to work their way back to the Supreme Court to give the Supreme Court an opportunity to retreat from the activism of 40 years ago in a number of areas, not just abortion.
Wow. Very cool.
Speaking of the Supreme Court, we all saw what happened with the Kavanaugh hearings. And these people on the left, they're running around like their hair is on fire.
Yeah.
What in the world is... Why this reaction?
Oh, because they are scared of change that may come. Because if this goes back in the hands of the people, it's not going to have the results they want. The other thing is they have an echo chamber. In their echo chamber, they hear only people who believe what they believe. They don't get out in real life in the same degree. And that's where you always find the silent majority shows up at elections and does stuff they didn't believe. I mean, silent majority showed up for Trump and they can't believe it, so they're screaming impeachment because they lost. And in that echo chamber, you always have I don't want to say untruthful, but it's an inaccurate view of what life is like out there. And by the way, I mean, the church has been pretty bad at having their own echo chamber. You remember the majority of pastors absolutely opposed Trump, and yet 75% of evangelical churchgoers voted for him. Trump's approval rating among evangelicals is highest it's ever been. It has just now reached the 50% mark among evangelical pastors. So pastors are still so far.
Yeah, but don't you think, David, they had a problem with his behavior?
But not now.
That they couldn't get over?
See,
I mean, I did.
I agree.
I voted for President Trump, but I didn't vote for him in the primary because I just had a problem with his stuff that I love about him now.
It's more understandable 2 years ago. But right now, it's not understandable because we're not talking his behavior. We're talking his judges. We're talking Israel.
Oh,
we're talking life. And
I
so,
agree.
And for pastors right now, 2 years into this, to just be coming to the majority level, that's a problem because they're not looking at policies. That just means they're not engaged. They don't know what's in the news.
Yeah.
They're still living on 2 years ago kind of stuff. I do not know of a president in my lifetime who's done as much to advance righteousness and policy as Trump has, and I use that by biblical standards. So whether it's Israel, whether it's life, whether it's Judges, Isaiah 126, all those issues, he's been above and beyond what any of us ever hoped, not just expected, but hoped.
No, I agree with that. But,
what do you see as the repercussions if Democrats are able to take the House of Representatives, which—
I do not receive that, Steve.
I hope not.
Huh?
I just— My purpose
is— Don't receive that, David. Don't receive that question.
I
don't want to end the show on a negative hypothetical.
What I'm hoping we can get is somebody that can urge people to get out and vote.
And we have less than 2 minutes left.
Yeah, so. I think that we will see— I think we'll do well in the House. I think we'll pick up plenty in the Senate. The problem we have is since 1980, in this election, only one out of eight Americans choose the winning candidate. That's how poor the turnout is. Now, at this point, in the last 30 special elections since Trump was elected, Democrats have outperformed their turnout by 39%. Republicans have outperformed their turnout by 25%. So it's going to be a high turnout election. It's just which side's going to turn out the most. And if Christians sit home and give away the House, then you have given away so many things, religious liberties, you've given away judges, you've given away so many things that should not be given away. And that will be on the backs of Christians if that happens. And I'll just be real blunt, because Christians are 72% of the nation by self-identification. They're the majority. If this goes the wrong direction, it's on them.
All right. I think Tim has a question about 6th. Butterflies and unicorns for you.
That's right.
That's right.
And rainbows.
Uh-huh. Okay. You don't want to go puppies. Yes.
Puppies.
Yeah.
Nice knowing you, Steve.
By the way, the election day is November the 6th. So make plans to vote November the 6th.
And half the states have started early voting now. So half the states are doing early voting, so get out and vote.
If you're going to be going out of town or not going to be able to vote on November the 6th, make sure you vote.
You got to vote.
And on federal races, go to ivoterguide.com or christianvoterguide.com. You have voter guides on the federal races. Really good.
And to see all the resources that Wall Builders offers, how do people do that?
Wallbuilders.com.
I was going to say, make sure you mention the title
of your new
book.
The new book, This Precarious Moment. It gives very specific solutions for each citizen to make a difference in the country. You don't have to sit on the sidelines any longer. You can get involved.
Hey, thank you, David. Appreciate it. Steve, thank you for your...
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I know you got to ask those kind of questions. You're a newsman.
That's kind of the way I think.
You don't have to insult Tim with unicorns and butterflies.
No, I think I wish I could ask some unicorn and puppy questions.
Are you
as well.
Saying that there's no such thing, Steve?
No.
As unicorns?
No, sir. If you believe them, I believe them.
It's in the Bible.
It's in the Bible.
Bible talks about unicorns.
Right, King James Version. Sure does.
Okay. We've opened up a can of worms right there. Go to David's Facebook to deal with that one.
Send your emails to David Martin.
Don't come to ours. Don't ask Brother Tim what he thinks about what David and Ed said. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Have a great day.